Just Love on the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world, but our particular take on it is our Catholic social teaching. We talk about the things in the world, trying to see how we should look at them from our themes of Catholic social teaching. The themes being the dignity of the human person, concern for the poor, workers, solidarity across the globe, the family, participation in civic life. Those are among the themes that we, or the values that we look at when we look at what's going on in the world. Now, I'm not going to ask Tom to do it again this week. He does this much better than I do, but I just gave you kind of the Cliff Note version of what are the major themes of our Catholic social teaching. Well, we are in New York. We are in the kind of the first part of the fall, which is a very kind of nice time in New York for those of you throughout the country. It's one of those times, if we get a nice fall, the foliage with the trees in the Northeast is just spectacular. This way there, I think, is a little bit muted, but it's still always nice. I'm going to have the opportunity actually this afternoon to kind of go see some of the foliage in upstate New York. So I am absolutely delighted by that. Last week, I actually went and did my annual apple picking, which was a wonderful experience. Maybe a little bit later on in the show, we'll talk a little bit about that. Tom, how's your fall going?
My fall's going really, really well, Monsignor. And I thought you did your apple picking because I want to thank you. You brought in all those great apples. So I was partaking in some of your largesse. Yep. So I was going to say, so I want to thank you for that.
Well, that's great. That is great. You know, Tom, thank you for, I'm delighted that Monsignor Peter Vaccari is going to be our guest. And he's going to be joining us right now. He is the president of the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, which is a pontifical, pastoral, and humanitarian organization. And I am very, very pleased that he is taking he's taking the time to be with us, because I know how very, very busy Monsignor Vaccari has been always, but particularly at this time. And in terms of full disclosure, Monsignor Vaccari and I went to the college seminary together in the Diocese of Brooklyn, and he now is the president of Catholic Near East Welfare Association. And I don't mind saying I am delighted, Monsignor Vaccari, that we are on the radio, because you are so much better looking than I am. You are younger than I am. So our listeners won't feel that you are putting me to shame, but I appreciate that we're on the radio. So thank you for joining us.
Monsignor Sullivan, thank you. It is always an honor and it is a treat to be in your company. And as you pointed out, we've had many opportunities over many years going back to college seminary days, to be together, to share ideas, and to advocate for those who are truly in need of hope. You have taken a leadership role, and I know, Monsignor, that this year is particularly important for you as the church, and particularly the church in the Archdiocese of New York, notes its your 25 years of leadership at Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of New York. Congratulations, Monsignor.
Well, thank you so much. And while just recently I moved into an emeritus role, which is basically kind of a senior advisory role, I'm trying to work with the new, very, very talented CEO of Catholic Charities, who, Tom, we're going to have on Just Love in a very short period of time. As I said to him, I'm here to help, not to butt in. So I'm trying to do that. But I still am doing some things like this radio show. I'll continue to do that. I'm going to be involved on the boards of our housing organization. So even though I've kind of moved on from being the CEO, I haven't, and I'm very grateful, and I'm grateful that people have not wanted me to sever my relationship with Catholic Charities, but move into a different role, which I am just delighted on. Monsignor Vaccari, I know that Catholic Near East Welfare Association is one of those organizations that has been so involved in trying to bring humanitarian and pastoral assistance to the people in Gaza. And I know that I believe you just very recently were in that part of that troubled part of the world. And thank you for taking the time. So maybe you would, again, for our listeners, just share just a little bit very briefly with them, what is the Catholic Near East Welfare Association? Some of our listeners who may not have heard previous broadcasts, bring them a little bit up to speed on that.
Sure. Thank you, Monsignor. So Catholic Near East Welfare Association has been in existence since 1926. We were started by Pope Pius XI, and the mandate from the beginning to the present day is to be in the service of Eastern Catholic Christians. That is our responsibility. This basically refers to the oldest of the churches, and those churches that really go back and can trace their roots to the apostles and the first missionaries. We are in headquarters is here in New York City, and then our offices on the ground in the Middle East are in Jerusalem, in Beirut, and in Amman, Jordan. We have offices in the Horn of Africa, in Ethiopia, and in Eritrea. We are in India, and then we have very important partnerships with the Eastern churches throughout Eastern Europe, Ukraine, Georgia, Armenia, and places like
that. So, Monsignor Vaccari, because I was confused about this until a few years ago, I think our listeners might. So just tease out what you just said. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Near East is probably a little bit of maybe a misnomer from the way we interpret that in the United States.
Yes, certainly. That's a very good point. And that's something that should change probably in the title, because it can be something that can only lead to confusion. Right. The responsibility that as Catholics, when you figure that there are probably 1.2 billion Catholics, 18 million or so of those are Eastern Catholics, wherever they're located. And so the mandate that CNEWA, Catholic Near East, has, notwithstanding the title, but the mandate that we have is to be in the service of all Eastern Catholics. In their place of origin. So the Eastern Catholics, for example, who are in the United States or in France, etc., they have their own structures and they have their own conferences that they take care of them.
Right. Okay, great. So now let's go to that very troubled part of the world. Within the past month or so, you actually traveled to the Middle East and to Israel, Palestine. Am I correct in that?
Yes, that is correct. So at the beginning of September, I went over there along with the Supreme Knight of the Knights of Columbus, Patrick Kelly, and with Archbishop Laurie, who is the Supreme Chaplain, but he's the Archbishop of Baltimore, but he's also the Vice President of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And we went with the Supreme Secretary. And from CNEWA, I was also accompanied by Michael LaCivita, who is our Director of Communications. So we were the team.
Let me interrupt you. We just, our listeners probably are familiar with Michael, because he has been such a wonderfully knowledgeable and good guest on Just Love a number of times. And I want to thank you for making him available to our listeners.
Oh, Monsignor, anytime. And he is very knowledgeable and probably the most knowledgeable when it comes to the history of the operation of CNEWA and Pontifical Mission.
Yep.
So our trip over there at the beginning of September, as you point out, was basically to meet with leadership over there in terms of getting an assessment from them as to the situation in the West Bank, in Gaza, in Israel, and Palestine. And by the leadership, I'm referring to the Latin Patriarch, Cardinal Pizzaballa. I'm referring to the Papal Nuncio to Israel and Apostolic Delegate to Palestine, Archbishop Yanna. I'm referring to the new Kustos for the Franciscans. The Franciscans have had a tremendous influence and have tremendously served all pilgrims into that region, literally since the 14th century. So we met with their new leadership.
Monsignor Vicari, pardon me. I get distracted and I have questions. Maybe our listeners don't. How'd the Franciscans get the job?
They got the job. Well, they got the job basically because of the activity when St. Francis was there. He had made a visit there. But then, following that, as they began to settle more and more in the region, it was ultimately made a papal decision was made in the middle of the 14th century with different religious orders present to entrust the responsibility for pilgrims to the Franciscans.
Okay, that's wonderful. I had, that makes me smarter. Our listeners, I hope you got smarter by that too.
No. So for us, it was a good opportunity to be there, as I say, to meet with these individuals whom I've just mentioned. It was also an opportunity for me to spend time, as I always do when I go there, with our office on the ground. And that's important. CNEWA and Pontifical Mission, we have an office on the ground in Jerusalem. So with the leadership of that office and with the leadership of the Order of Malta, the Sovereign Order of Malta. We had a very important meeting that involved Malta, the Knights of Columbus, Pontifical Mission, and that was to assess and say, okay, how are we going to start to get basic humanitarian assistance into Gaza, and for that matter, continue to get it into other places in Palestine, in the West Banks, for place example, like Taibe being the last Christian village, which is located about 8 to 10 miles north and east of Jerusalem. We made a visit to that Christian village to assess the situation that was there. But more importantly, right now, to think strategically in terms of Catholic presence to try to get aid into Gaza when safe passage could be assured.
Okay. Did you, how much were you able to travel outside of Jerusalem?
Oh, well, outside of Jerusalem, we were able to travel. For example, we went through the checkpoints into Bethlehem. We went further north, as I said, we went to Taibe being north of Jerusalem, 8 to 10 miles. So we were able to do that for the purpose of also bringing the Supreme Knight to project sites where CNEWA is involved in humanitarian assistance right now. We were able to get there. We were also able to inform them of the strategic decision that CNEWA made back in October of 2023 to work in Gaza with groups in Gaza, other NGOs in Gaza, to make sure that since that time to the present moment, we have been able to bring in clean water, medicine, working with a local hospital in Gaza, produce and vegetables. So that has been uninterrupted since October of 2023. And the
And
horrific.
it was it just for our listeners, 2023, that was the October 7th.
Correct. So
Got it.
since that horrific attack by those extremist groups, including Hamas, we've been able to be in there doing very small amount, but something has been able to happen in there.
We're speaking with Monsignor Peter Vicari, the president of Catholic Near East Welfare Association, which has a responsibility for Eastern Catholics, even well beyond what we would think of as the Near or the Middle East. I have to ask you this question. Were you able to actually physically visit Gaza?
No, we were not. The
Okay.
last time that I was in Gaza was in June of 2023. But no, this visit we were not allowed to go into Gaza.
Again, from but you have people who you're working with who are there.
Yes.
I mean, we all read in the media what's going on. Is your assessment that there is tremendous amount of humanitarian suffering and there's not enough food and water and stuff getting? What are your people on the ground telling you?
Yeah, Monsignor, on that, I would say to the first point, yes, there is an enormous amount of human suffering going on there.
Right.
Now, it's human suffering, it's psychological. People are traumatized, as you can well imagine, given what they have gone through. And the fact is that nothing officially is getting in there outside of literally three visits that the Patriarch, Cardinal Pizzaballa, made, in which
Yeah.
case, during which times he was able to bring something in. There is nothing else that's going in. So in the converse, in one of the meetings that we had with other leadership, one of the things that we've been able to identify are locations where food and medicine is being stored. But it's not going to get into Gaza until hostages are released and until the military operation stops, and until we are able then to assure safe passageway for these groups to go in, including ourselves. Our arrangement is, on the one hand, in certain sections, different because of groups that are on the ground. But we, like Malta and like the Patriarchate, we're waiting right now for the ceasefire, the release of the hostages, and then safe passageway to get food in, food and
You
medicine.
know, I think I read this in the media that even though Cardinal Pizzaballa has gone there, he had a little bit of difficulty sometimes getting in. It wasn't completely smooth, his entry into Gaza. Did I
Correct.
read that in the media?
Well, I don't know if it's correct. That was certainly had been ex his experience.
Right. Were you able to meet with any representatives of the Israeli government?
We were not. We did not.
Okay.
But we did not request on this
Okay.
meeting. We did not request that
Right.
kind of a meeting.
You know, Monsignor Vaccari, one of the things that I think we heard in the not too distant past, that there is one Catholic parish in Gaza, which kind of was a little source of some humanitarian aid, and that was a there was a bombing there in the not too distant past. Can you tell us a little bit about that parish and what was going on in that parish?
Sure. So the parish, Monsignor, the parish is the parish of the Holy Family. The pastor's name is Father Romanelli. When I was there in June of 2023, we visited the parish, had good conversation with Father Romanelli. To his credit, Father Romanelli and the small Christian community, but both the Catholic community and the Orthodox community, and they're very close to each other, they really have been able to provide the only area of safe haven where they've been able to give some protection, they've been able to give some clean water, they've been able to offer some food and medicine. They are really the ones that are there in Gaza, giving some place for people to go.
Okay, and they're still continuing to do that despite
They,
the
yes,
opposition.
they've been able to do that with this, what they've been able to store, as we've been able in a place that's not too far from there to also give some medical assistance to one of the local hospitals in Gaza.
You know, I know this is that the situation is reft with a lot of politics and political stuff and all of that. And I know that the incredible faithful approach of Catholic Near East Welfare Association has not to engage in the politics, but in the pastoral and humanitarian relief, which for that, I think you should be praised and thanked for that faithfulness to that mission. What I'm struggling with a little bit is, and as you know, I'm also pastor of a parish in Manhattan. How do I raise up to my parishioners the tremendous humanitarian and pastoral suffering going out there without being political or partisan? I need some kind of your thoughts on that.
That's a great challenge, Monsignor, and I'm faced with the same challenge when I go out to speak, because I go out to different places in the United States, and the questions that I get are the questions concerning the political consequences, the political operation that's involved here, and of course, the other question that I get is to be able to assure donors of safety with regard to their donations not going into the hands of Hamas and going to those people who need to receive it. On the first matter, the distinction that I struggled with and the distinction that I make is that Kineiwa, by nature of its being involved on the ground with people, is going to be political. We are not partisan. So we have no interest in aligning ourselves with any political party. But we realize that the only way that they were going to move toward a solution is for politicians on all sides to get involved. They're going to have to be the ones who are going to have to make things happen. That's going to be, in my opinion, political without being partisan. I have no interest in partisan politics. I do have interest in the politics on the ground, being able to release the hostages, open the safe passageways, and start to make sure that aid can get through.
Yeah. You know, Monsignor Vaccari, the issue that you raised is one that I'm very familiar with, because it's exactly the same issue that Catholic Charities deals with in the United States. And unfortunately, in this incredibly partisan and divided world that we live in, just as I think Near East is misunderstood as what Catholic Near East does, it's broader than that. I think far too many people, when they hear the word politics, they assume it means partisanship.
Yes.
And so even when we define it in the proper way, it still got in too many people's minds, oh, why is the church getting involved in politics? Why it's doing that? Bah, 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 bah. So while the distinction you make, I think, is absolutely true, we just have to keep at it, because it is so misunderstood in a lot of different ways. Let me ask you this, because I over the years I've found, and I think you found, and by the way, let me compliment you for the magazine that you put out, which is so well done. And I've heard compliments for it. So thank you for the magazine that you put out. You can plug it if you want to for our listeners. Tell us what the name of it is and how can they get copies.
Right. So thank you, Monsignor. And I also thank you for your years of leadership in terms of Catholic Charities in the United States, and how you have really been able to articulate that distinction between getting politically involved without being partisan. With regard to the magazine, the name of the magazine is One. That's the name of the magazine. The credit in terms of the quality of the magazine really goes to a number of people, starting with the executive editor, who is Michael LaCivita, but also with the editorial staff, starting with the editor, Laura Iorachi, and of course with the individual who is the digital assets manager, Tim McCarthy. Under their leadership, their teams are the ones who have really, I think, done an extraordinary job with the quality of this magazine. And I also want to credit the photojournalists and the storytellers that we have on the ground in the places where we work, whether it's in Beirut, whether it's through the office in Beirut or through the office in Jerusalem or Ethiopia or in India. Our team here, in collaboration with our offices on the ground, they are the ones who are able to get the writers, and they're the ones who get the photojournalists who make the magazine. I believe, and I agree with you, but I obviously from a more a biased perspective, that it's an outstanding magazine. And by going online, kanewa.org, you can also have access there to getting your own copy of the magazine.
You know, one of the things that I've learned over the years, and I'm sure you've learned, whether it be with the magazine or just talking to people, they really resonate with human interest stories.
Yeah.
Is there a story or two in your travels that really has touched you that I'm going to steal it, that I might be able to use, or our listeners might be able to use, if they are trying to raise up the work of Catholic Near East Welfare Association, particularly in Palestine and in the Middle East? Any story or two that to you epitomizes the tremendous work going on?
Okay. I'll just share two with you then, Monsignor. The first one is what I've learned in my experience now with Kanewa and Pontifical Mission is that this is the Catholic Church putting forth the social justice message of the gospel. When we are on the ground trying to give assistance, humanitarian assistance, we never ask a person's creed, We don't care about language, gender, politics, or anything like that. If we're trying to serve people, for example, in the earthquake between Syria and Turkey, we're there trying to get clean water and medicine, regardless of what your creed is, regardless of what your age is. This is, we feel, the mandate that we have had that Jesus gave a long time ago, answering the question, who is my neighbor? It's just to be there because we're Catholic. We don't give to you because you're Catholic or anything else. That's irrelevant to us. That's the first thing. I've become aware of that, more aware of that in my travel. But the second is, I'll use one example of an issue that we're very involved in and only growing in our involvement. And that is, as Pope Francis used to refer to it, the scourge of human trafficking, the scourge of human trafficking. And what Pope Francis said, and I've seen it when I've participated, for example, in Beirut, and I participated in Jerusalem in day-long workshops dedicated to trying to protect victims of human trafficking or to partner with others who want to give assistance to victims of human trafficking. And I'm reminded again of the words of Pope Francis, when you go to a place and children, and you meet children, and those children are not smiling, where children are not smiling, there is no hope. Unfortunately, I've been to too many places and to too many workshops on this horror of human trafficking, where I've been in the midst of children and their mothers crying with the children and looking for some glimpse of hope.
Oh, I think that is wonderful. I think that is a really, really good thing. And let me just share with you something very, very personal. On the other side, a little sign of hope. Yesterday, actually walking around my office, which is right near St. Patrick's Cathedral, was a little baby. And this was a little baby who was smiling, who was incredibly happy, whose mother, one of our Catholic Charities agencies, Catholic Guardian Services, had been working with while she was pregnant, was helping her while she was pregnant. And now the child is, I think, 8 or 9 months old. And he was just incredibly happy, well taken care of. And the mom was smiling. And I hadn't thought about that till you just mentioned the opposite. And I just was elated by how wonderful, I'm sorry, it was a girl. It wasn't a boy. How wonderful she was yesterday. So thank you for sharing that with us.
No, congratulations to you and to Catholic Charities.
Well, okay. Any final thing that you want our listeners to kind of take away?
Really, Monsignor, I'm very grateful to you for the opportunity to be here, for the respect and the admiration that I've had for you for many, many years and your leadership. I ask your listeners, number one, for prayer. I've seen how powerful prayer is. I remember being being with Cardinal Dolan in Jerusalem. We had just celebrated Mass in Jerusalem to mark the 75th anniversary of pontifical mission. It was a Saturday. And then on Sunday, we were going to go over to Bethlehem, in the Bethlehem area, to celebrate Mass. During that night, it was one of the nights in which just drones and missiles came down on Jerusalem. The next morning, we went to the same place for the Mass, and people were walking in the streets, having experienced over the last 3 and 4 hours, missiles and drones coming down on them. But now, for them, what was most important was the opportunity to pray. Their lives had been almost turned around in the matter of hours during the night. But for them, the resiliency, the faith, and the prayer. So I would ask your listeners for prayer. I would ask them to really go to our website to be aware of what is happening and what, not Kenewa, but what the Catholic Church is doing in these regions of the world that we all hear about and see on our daily news programs. One of the most popular groups that I speak with when I'm on the road are the young high school students and college age students on campuses. And then, of course, I'm asking everybody, I'm Kenewa's chief beggar. So if anybody has an extra few pennies or dimes that they can send toward Kenewa, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, Peter is very good about that. But I'm going to say, if you have additional $1,000 checks, you could also write them to Kenewa, too. We're in New York, so we need to be. And I do think I think it is important because somebody wrote to me within the past week or so saying, well, why aren't we doing anything about what's going on in Gaza and stuff like that? I had to remind him that I think there was a national collection only a few weeks ago, which the money was raised up. And I think it's going to both Kenewa and is it all some going to Catholic Relief Services also?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the church throughout the United States is raising up. Now, I'm not going to mention names, but the individual had to point out to me that he missed Mass on the Sunday of the collection. So I said, well, all right. But anyway, and if you haven't donated to that collection 2 weeks ago, you make your contribution because it's going to go in a good place. And I can tell you that Catholic Near East Welfare Association uses that money well. And I can also tell you that Catholic Relief Services uses their donations very well. So that money will, the overwhelming majority of it is going to go to help people who are in devastating situations. Monsignor Peter Vicari, President, Catholic Near East Welfare Association, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. You know that you and your team have an open invitation whenever you want to come on Just Love to share with our listeners the tremendous pastoral and humanitarian work that you're doing. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Monsignor Sullivan. Right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Tom, I think it's time for us to take a break. And before we take a break, we always say it, just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Well, Tom, I think it's time for me to talk a little bit about my apple picking, which I did last week. God, thank you. The weather could not have been more perfect. It was just a great, great afternoon. I was up in Connecticut with my cousin, and I think we've done this now for about 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not exactly sure, but I think that's about right. But I want to share with my listeners that we were a little bit more adventuresome this year because my cousin discovered a new little orchard.
Oh.
As opposed to the old big one that we have gone to for the previous 9 years. And this one, a little closer to her, where she lives near Southbury, Connecticut. And it was delightful, a little bit different. And this one, but again, not very commercial. Some of them, okay. Tom, you may know that wonderfully they cater to families. So they have a lot of rides, they have a lot of entertainment. So the children are there. But then there are for places like for us, old fogies. Not too much, a little bit. Apple cider donuts. You got to have apple cider donuts when you
that's
go.
That's important. I agree with you. Absolutely.
And I will tell you, you know, my review, the apple cider donuts at the new place, better than at the old place.
Okay. Well, maybe they're catering to that older crowd.
Right. Well, but the reason they were better is they weren't the larger ones. They were kind of the mini donuts. So
very nice.
You didn't feel as guilty when you ate two or three of them because they were there. I don't know, Tom, I don't know if you got one because I brought a box into the office.
I didn't get the donuts, Monsignor, but I did get your apple. It was kind of like an apple pie, apple crisp. Yeah, delicious.
Let me take it back. An apple galette.
Yeah, I had two. I had two slices of that.
Oh, wonderful!
It was very good.
Did it get a good review?
Very good review. Very, very good. Very, very. I mean, for listeners, unfortunately, you cannot partake in Monsignor's apple treats, but I can vouch for them. They're excellent.
Yeah. But let me tell you about this orchard, okay? And listeners, if you're not interested, okay, but I am, and Tom is, so hopefully you're interested. Wonderful place. I mean, relatively new. I think they only began growing apples in the 1990s.
So oh, wow.
Right.
Okay.
But really nice, abundant apples this year.
Okay.
Very, very fresh. They had, even though it was much smaller than the other place, still it was pretty big. They probably had, 20 or 25 rows of apples. And for
Okay.
anybody who's gone apple picking, there's rows and you go down the rows and you pick the apples. For those of you who haven't, just if you think about it, think about a football field, okay? And think about the various yard lines, like the 10-yard line, the 20-yard line, all of that, okay? Now it's a little bit wider than a football field, but they grow the trees down that line, and you can walk on either side of those and pick the apples as you go down. And as you might imagine, it goes pretty long, the row. And because people start at the beginning, the later you go in the apple picking season, the further down the row you have to go to get them. But I have to tell you, there were abundant apples there. They were great. They had probably 15 different varieties of apples. Now, the thing that my cousin and I always laugh about is we pay real close attention to which row has which apple. And then we throw them in our apple bag and we don't know which is which. So, all of that is kind of gone. But, that's what life is about. But it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And this year, a little bit nut because the apple orchard is, about 5 or 10 minutes away from where you park your car and where the apple stand is. They give you a hayride out to the
Oh,
apple. So
that's
that's kind of
nice.
nice. That's kind
Nice.
of nice. So it was a good week. And the other thing was, I was a little bit smarter this year. I think I bought the right number of apples. Last year, I bought too many,
Too many.
and
I
too
remember you saying
many. Yeah, too many. This
that.
year, I think I have the right number to do what I need to do, and it'll be fine. It'll be great.
Excellent.
So anyway,
Excellent.
so that's my apple story, and thank you for the positive review of my apple galette.
It was excellent,
And
Monsieur.
why don't we go to our guest? I am very pleased that our next guest is Destiny Herndon de la Rosa, the founder and president of New Wave Feminist. Excuse me. Destiny, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Tell our listeners, if you would, a little bit of your background and how you wound up doing what you are doing now.
Yeah, so my name is Destiny Herndon De La Rosa. I run an organization called New Wave Feminist, and it is a consistent life ethic group. So we are pro-life from womb to tomb, which kind of sets us apart from a lot of other feminist groups that tend to focus on abortion. But when I started the organization, gosh, 17, 18 years ago, it was just a MySpace page. It was never supposed to take off like this. And I quickly realized starting a feminist organization that because of my pro-life beliefs, we were going to be a little bit different. And I think we ended up kind of creating a space for a lot of women who also are pro-life, but felt like they didn't necessarily have a place in the pro-life movement and in the feminist movement, with kind of both of these things coming together.
And how's it gone?
I mean, it was a MySpace page, and now we have shelters at the border, and there's like women and children who are like being taken care of. And I just keep thinking this has gotten out of control. I had no idea that this was the path it was going to take, but clearly there was a need for it. So it's going pretty well.
I know, I do know a fair amount about nonprofit organizations that are trying to help people do good. And I know the need always outstrips the resources available to do it. And everybody's doing 27 different things in the organization. Do you have people who are working with you as staff of New Wave Feminist?
We do. So there's two of us currently employed by New Wave Feminist, myself and then my best friend, Karina Berceda. She runs our shelters at the border. So we have one in Juarez, Mexico, and one in El Paso, Texas. And the goal of the shelters is for pregnant and parenting migrant mothers and single women as well, who are very vulnerable down in that area, especially just to provide safe shelter as they wait on, asylum or figuring out places that would be safe for them and their children to go to. And so that is her community. She knows it incredibly well. And she saw the need, and she saw that, you know, Planned Parenthood and these other abortion providers were trying to access, to gain access to a lot of the shelters down there. Because unfortunately, women, especially ones who become pregnant through sexual violence, they're very vulnerable to being sold on the idea of abortion. But what they don't have is the resource to actually continue their pregnancy in a safe place, access prenatal care, and then raise their children. And so we just saw a need for that. And like I said, I remember telling her, I don't know if we can raise any money. We'll throw it out there and see what sticks. And then we were able to, because a lot of people really did want to give to this cause. They just needed the space to be created for it.
So you raised an issue which actually our previous guest also raised in a very, very different way. From your experience on the ground, we hear a lot about human trafficking. Is your experience that is a really, it's obviously an awful thing, but can you say a little bit about that and what your experience is with that issue and the people you're dealing with?
Absolutely. There's definitely a very dark underbelly when you have vulnerable populations who are desperate. And so in many cases, especially somebody who has children, they're very vulnerable to being trafficked, to being exploited in the most degrading ways humanly possible, especially, you know, with the proliferation of the internet and people across the world who can say, for $50, I want to see this, film this thing happening. And there's a lot of women who would say, no, just kill me, I'm not going to do that. But when it comes to, well, I'm going to kill your child in front of you if you don't do this, we've just noticed that mothers especially are incredibly vulnerable to really being exploited in that way along the border.
Again, you know, since you know a lot about this issue, you know, from my little reading about the issue, human trafficking oftentimes, I think, falls into two major categories. There are probably a lot more, but one of them is sexual trafficking, but the other is labor trafficking, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think any way that people can be exploited, of course, because we work with women, it is a lot of sexual trafficking, but there's other exploitative ways, you know, which is why we think it's really important for our women to be able to come through the legal channels and make sure that they are documented, because so often we see that when migrants come to America, you know, they're being hired for services, people won't pay them. It's kind of like, well, who are you going to tell? You're not even supposed to be here, or you don't have the proper documentation. And so it creates this whole invisible population that can be exploited for labor and sex trafficking and all types of things. So the more that we can, you know, we as human beings obviously see the human dignity of these people, but the more that we can even make sure that they have as much documentation as possible so they can advocate for themselves and we can advocate for them, I think that's vitally important.
We're speaking with Destiny Herndon De La Rosa, who is the founder and president of New Wave Feminists, went from a little bitty Facebook page to now a full-blown organization that also provides services of shelter for migrant women and their children. You know, you mentioned something early on, and I think, you know, probably our listeners, like in general, when they think of pro-life people, they think about the issue of pregnancy and abortion. You framed it a little bit more broadly. Could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that, so a lot of it comes, my activism is rooted in my own personal experience. My mom was 19 years old at the University of Texas in Austin when she got pregnant with me. And this was 10 years after Roe v. Wade. She could have easily had an abortion. Nobody needed to know about this. And instead, she knew that I was a human being from the moment I first existed. So it's funny because people will say, well, are you a feminist or are you pro-life? As if you can only be one or the other. And, you know, I believe very strongly in bodily autonomy. I believe in it more than most feminist, because I believe the moment your body first exists, it should be protected from violence. And so my mother saw my humanity, and, you know, it created a lot of roadblocks for her. It took her 10 years to complete her degree. And, you know, we really struggled during that time. So a lot of the excuses people use for why you should terminate, those were my life experiences, right? And yet I'm still very, very grateful that I'm here and I have that chance at life. And then as I got older and kind of definitely got sucked into the culture of, you know, sexual liberation and all of that, I ended up becoming pregnant myself at 16 years old. And I knew that from my own beginnings, and again, growing up, very aware of the fact that I could have easily been aborted myself. I knew that I had to get this kid to the starting line. I didn't know what I was going to do after that, but I was at least going to make sure that he was born. And thankfully, because I had, you know,
Destiny, let me interrupt you for a second. That is absolutely, and I'm kind of old and decrepit. The first time I've ever heard somebody talk about from pregnancy, conception to birth, as getting the kid to the starting line. I think that is a great, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but
No.
Please keep using that image. I think it's a great image.
I think it's definitely when we understand the humanity of the unborn person in the womb, right? It's, I don't know that I can commit to this for the next 18 years, which is honestly really a lifetime.
Right.
Once you have a child, right, and you're raising them, but I did know that I could make it 9 months. And a lot of my peers at the same time were getting pregnant. And for them, there was so much pressure to terminate.
Right.
Sometimes it was their parents. It was kicking him out of the house. It was all of these other things. And so it was ironic when people were like, "You're anti-choice." I felt the exact opposite. I felt like so many of my friends who were terminating felt like they had no choice but to abort. And I felt like I did have privilege and choices. I had healthcare, I had housing, I had, you know, I always say I had a roof over my head, food in my mouth, clothes on my back. Like, I had more than most people, and I had a family support system. And so I was able to give birth to my child. And ultimately, I decided that I was going to parent. He's 24 years old now, which is crazy to me. Like, I can't believe it. He's a whole complete, you know, adult person, contributing member of society. He's wonderful. And then I just look at that experience and think, you know, because I did have more than most people, and I didn't have a ton, but I had enough. How many people have so little, and they might not have that family support system, but if we as a community can come around and surround people. And so that definitely has directed New Wave Feminists' focus. We always say that we're not working to make abortion illegal. We're working to make it unnecessary and unthinkable, right? And so you make it unthinkable by humanizing the unborn child in the womb. You make it unnecessary by empowering women with at least the same stuff that I was given to get to that starting line, right? So how can we focus on housing, healthcare, transportation, childcare? Those are the four main things that when a woman is abortion vulnerable, she needs those needs met. And then a lot of times abortion is off the table when she has that community support.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I would imagine, as in this kind of very divisive world that we now live in, probably your approach probably has met a little bit of resistance from some other people who would consider themselves pro-life.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, I always joke that there's something for everyone to hate. So, you know, when I sit down on the airplane and somebody's like, "Oh, are you traveling for work? What do you do?" I'm like, all right, if we're going to do this. But there's also something for, there's something for everybody to like as well, because I can probably relate. I'm an independent. I'm not Republican or Democrat. I don't fit into a binary. I personally am agnostic. I joke the only day I don't hang out with Catholics is Sunday, though, because I'm usually surrounded by a lot of people of faith doing really wonderful work. And so it definitely puts us in a space where we say we're in the radical middle. We have very strong views on protecting vulnerable human life. But it also takes us out of these kind of siloed thinking of like, well, if I'm part of this party, I have to believe this, or, you know, and because a lot of times there's compromises in both of those spaces. And so we are able to literally, we believe human beings should be free from violence from womb to tomb. We follow a consistent life ethic. And when you kind of get away from the radical extreme, dreams, in the radical middle, you find so many people who have that common ground, or they at least see your point and agree with a lot of it. But yeah, back in 2017, we were actually a part of the Women's March on Washington, and we were sponsors for 4 days. And then, you know, we made it very clear we were pro-life, but once word got out and articles being written about it, they removed us as sponsors. And it was this big kind of national news thing for about 2 weeks. And best thing that ever happened to us, I was able to go out and talk about a consistent life ethic, which I think is it's a different version of pro-life than most people are familiar with. I would say the kind of the Catholic version is seamless garment, right?
Right.
And so kind of getting back to those roots, and it's funny because this week, multiple times people have sent me the recent clip from the Pope talking about being pro-immigration and anti-death penalty and how this is truly pro-whole life. And I'm like, man, I can't wait for the collab that New Wave Feminist is going to have with the Pope, because this is what we've been saying for, you know, going on 2 decades now. But I do think most people can relate to that because there is consistency in it. So even if they struggle with maybe, you know, being pro-choice or allowing for abortion up to a certain amount, or, you know, they're on the pro-life side and they struggle with the immigration issue or the death penalty, we're saying here's a space, like a space where we can wrestle with these things and challenge each other's consistency. And it's a really beautiful, it's a beautiful table that's been created, and I'm just really glad that I get to be seated at it.
Destiny Herndon De La Rosa, founder, president, New Wave Feminist, thank you so much for sharing with us, but thank you even more so for the work that you are doing. I hope that we might invite you back sometime to be a guest again on our show, because I think you bring a very, very important perspective to our listeners. Thank you for being with us on Just
Thank
Love.
You for having me.
Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Thank you for being with us on Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. We've looked at today two very, very important issues. The work of Catholic Near East Welfare Association in the Middle East and beyond, in the devastated humanitarian crisis that's going on in Palestine, in Gaza, the West Bank, in Israel. And we spoke with a leader in the pro-life, consistent life ethic from Texas. I hope that you appreciated them. I thought they were great guests. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.